Hello, and welcome back to We Are the Weirdos, Mister, the podcast for all things cult, camp, queer, and creepy. I am your host, Hillary Michelle Post, and I am joined today by my best friend, Julie. How are you doing today, Jules?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I've been pretty lazy today. I keep forgetting it's New Year's Eve, and that it's kind of like a holiday, because it's just a Saturday, you know?
Walmart was a madhouse.
I bet. Yeah, when mom said she was going to go shopping today, she like came out fully dressed, ready to rock and roll at like 10 o'clock this morning. Like, are you going already? She's like, yeah, it's New Year's Eve. Places are going to close early. I was like, oh yeah, shit. Have fun with that.
Yeah, that's... I tried to get out of the house because I knew I had to hit the pharmacy. And I was like, oh, I better go early just in case they close early. I was like, I better get there before noon. I didn't get there before noon, but it was fine because they were still open. So
that's good. Everyone, I've talked about it. I've threatened it forever. It finally happened. I got a new laptop. I got it for
you
Christmas.
You did it.
Hooray. I got it for Christmas. It's pretty. It's new. I'll slowly be rolling out new things. Like, we tried to use my new microphone. It didn't work today, but I'll get it to work eventually. We'll eventually have a new way of recording. I downloaded a new software that I don't know how to use that my brother has to teach me. So, my brother is a big YouTube star now, so he knows how to do all that stuff. So good things coming, nice. Hopefully, down the pike. Today, however, we are going to be talking about the 1992 dark comedy Death Becomes Her, starring Meryl Streep, Goldie Hawn, and Bruce Willis. This film is a very self-aware camp satire, and while it was a commercial success, it still has what I would consider a cult legacy. It has been on my list for this podcast for a long time. I was just kind of waiting for it to get back on like a free platform, and for the stars to align, and it became free, so we're doing it for the first episode of the new year. Julie, do you remember the first time you saw this film and what you thought of it?
Absolutely not. You always ask me that, Hillary. I will never, ever in my life remember the first time I watched something. I don't remember. I couldn't tell you. Not a clue. You know what I don't remember? The beginning of this movie. No. Do I remember? I don't remember the beginning of this movie at all. Like, no. Like, literally. No. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying, like, I watched it last night. I watched it in September with some other friends of ours. My thing is that I hardly ever remember the beginning of this movie. From watching it when a kid, I remember it from like the middle scenes on. Do not remember the beginning. Not at all.
You know what's funny about
this? I can't believe you had the audacity to ask me if I remembered when I saw something. I don't remember anything.
I mean, and to be fair, I also start like my notes and my outlines, not knowing who's going to be recording with me, because sometimes Lacey remembers.
No, I don't remember anything. Like people come up to me and they'd be like, oh my God, remember when you were in school and you did this? No, I don't. I have no memory of this place. Not a clue. I don't remember. Your remembrance of me is new to me. Not a clue. No clue.
But you did watch this movie when you were young. This wasn't like a recent viewing.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Same.
Oh, yeah. I definitely remember. I watched it when I was there. Yeah.
It was one of those movies that made the rounds on like HBO, TNT, that kind of stuff.
I would say it was probably on TV when I watched it.
Yeah.
Feel like my brothers probably liked it. Like, I feel like this is a very, like, Frank movie. He would have liked this.
Yeah.
So he would have made sure that I saw it.
It has such an iconic poster, too. I remember, like, seeing the poster at the video store growing up a lot. With Madeline's head on backwards and Helen's hole in her stomach. Like, it's very iconic. So before we get into the plot, let's give a little background on the film. Death Becomes Her was directed by Robert Zemeckis and was co-written by David Koepp and Martin Donovan. It was originally a concept for a potential Tales of the Crypt film, as Zemeckis was the producer of that series, before eventually evolving into its own property. It was a real trailblazing film in terms of visual effects and won Best Visual Effects Awards at the Oscars, BAFTAs, and Saturn Awards. The film's star, Meryl Streep, however, was not a fan of the tedium involved in filming such an effects-heavy movie, and afterwards she swore she would never do another film that required so many digital effects. Which I don't know if that she entirely like held to that, but I mean, for the most part, I can't think of anything else other than maybe Into the Woods that would have had a lot of special effects.
Yeah. Well, and I'm sure special effects got easier as time went on, too.
Oh, yeah, totally. I was reading about the production of this film, and there was a lot of trial and error. Like, they tried a lot to do a lot of the effects practically, like with animatronics and stuff, and it just didn't work. And so a lot of stuff ended up getting replaced with CGI. So it was really... And a lot of the stuff that they used in this film ended up moving forward and helping a lot in the production of Jurassic Park. So this kind of like laid some groundwork.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Death Becomes Her filmed from December 1991 to April 1992 in California. It was released in July of 92 and was a moderate commercial success, grossing $149 million worldwide with a budget of $55 million. So it made three times its cost. It had mixed reviews from critics, including two thumbs down from Siskel and Ebert, which I find surprising.
What?
Yeah.
They don't have taste.
They really don't. The film, however, has gone on to have a cult following, especially in the queer community. The main characters, Madeline and Helen, are frequent inspirations to drag queens, including Drag Race winner Jinx Monsoon, who's one of my favorite queens, who cites the film as the thing that made her want to do drag. Like a lot of films that we cover on here, there's a movie that's popular, there's a movie in mainstream, there's movies that are popular in subcultures, and then there's movies that are popular in queer culture, and this is a queer realm. Like, a lot of people like this movie, but the gays love this movie. You know what's funny?
And a couple different people. Right too.
Exactly. A couple different people that I talked to about this movie confuse it with She-Devil. I've talked to two different people recently who both were like, oh, I love that movie with Roseanne. I'm like, no. That's She-Devil. That's another Meryl Streep movie from the 90s. And I had to explain what this one is. And they're like, oh.
I have never heard of that before in my life.
She-Devil, it's actually really good. Roseanne's husband leaves her for Meryl Streep's character, and it's about her getting revenge on them. It's pretty funny. I recommend checking it out.
Hmm.
Even though Roseanne is now a piece of shit, back in the 90s, she was okay. So the movie starts in 1978. The actress Madeline Ashton, played by Meryl Streep, stars in Songbird, a Broadway musical adaptation of the Tennessee Williams play Sweet Bird of Youth, which is about an aging actress.
Google that.
Yeah. I've never read that Tennessee Williams play. Have you?
No, but I kind of want to watch the movie now because Paul Newman's in it and he plays a gigolo.
Ooh. The musical, however, is very poorly received, and we see audience members getting up and walking out in the middle of the show. Now, from the one number, you can tell that it's like shitty, but it's not that. It's not like get up and walk out shitty. Like, if you paid to see that, you'd be like, yeah, get it, Madeline.
Right? Yeah, I liked the musical number, but I'm not to be trusted.
Can I please tell them what you texted me yesterday?
What'd I say?
You were like, Jabba the Hutt, smash.
Yeah. Yeah. I told you not to be trusted.
Yeah. Like, I love you, Julie, but your standards can vary at times.
I want a big boy. I want a hutsy gangster.
So at this performance of Songbird that we see at the beginning of the movie is longtime frenemy of Madeline's Helen Sharp, played by Goldie Hawn, and her fiance Ernest Menville, who is loving the show.
Yeah, he's loving it. Okay, back to the walking out of a show like that. Like, that's what the producers wanted to be.
Right.
That's what they wanted to be, and they weren't. Right. Yeah. And I think that Dr. Menville is a very simple man who really thinks with his wiener.
I would say so. I think that's fair to say. Ernest, played by Bruce Willis. Kevin Kline was originally cast in the role of Ernest, but he dropped out due to a dispute. No,
I don't think it would have worked as well. I think Bruce Willis is perfect.
That's so funny. I feel the complete opposite. I feel like Kevin Kline is handsomer and more charming, and I would have bought them.
All fighting over the same. But it was never about Ernest. It's not about him.
I know, it's about his being a plastic surgeon, but
I don't even think it's about that. It's about them trying to get at each other. It isn't about him at all, to me. It's them trying to get at each other.
There's got to be, like, there's got to be something, a root there somewhere. Like, I don't know. You're right, but I just wish, I like Bruce Willis. I think he's a handsome guy, but in this, they have him not be handsome or charming at all. He's just... You're just like, why? All this fuss over this. Yeah.
Yes. But I also really love him in this role because I think he's really funny.
He's really funny, and it's very...
He's really funny.
It's very different role for him.
You know yes. I mean? I don't think I've ever seen him in anything like this again. Not like this.
Right.
But I actually don't watch a lot of Bruce Willis films, except for Die Hard, my favorite Christmas movie.
And Sixth Sense, my favorite Bruce Willis movie.
Fair.
Yeah. Jennifer Jason Leigh was considered for the role of Helen Sharp, which would have been very different in every way, like tones, just everything. It would have been very strange. I like Jennifer Jason Leigh, but she's kind of intense.
Ugh.
Yeah.
I couldn't remember who it was.
Did you look her up?
No. Yeah.
So Helen and Ernest go backstage to see Madeline. And I love that. I love that moment where she's like posing in the chair and she's like practicing her surprise face. She's like,
yeah.
Love that.
Here's the thing. She's just really just gone no contact. Like, why are you doing this? What's the point? You know what I mean? Like, why? Like, you don't have to be friends with her. Like, you could just see, be like, bye. Like, you don't have to be friends with her. And I also, like, there's no reason to still be friends with somebody like that. And also, why would you introduce the man you want to marry to someone that's, like, vindictive enough that has taken your boyfriends before? Why would you do that? What's wrong with you? That's why it's not about him. Like, it's very weird.
But she also makes the point of saying later in the, in the very next scene after this, she's like, it was almost like a test. And I can kind of respect that. You know what I mean? Just like, I had to make sure you're the one. And if you were the one, then you would pass the Madeline test, which Ernest does not pass.
Okay. I guess I see what you're saying.
Yeah. She straight up says that. Like, because we see Madeline, like, goes to Ernest. Because Ernest is, like we mentioned, is a very famous plastic surgeon. Like, so famous that Madeline knows him by name when she meets him. So that's why she's intrigued by him. Because she's like, ooh, you know. Because she's already worried about her age. And she, like, visits him at his work, and then you see Helen and Ernest arguing about it. And he's, like, trying to calm Helen down, and he says, I have no interest in Madeline Ashtew, and then smash cut to Madeline and Ernest's wedding.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Her showing up at his work while he's, like, neck deep in, like, cosmetic surgery. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
They're nuts. These women are nuts.
Sure are. We have a 7-year...
He looks like such a dweeb in that movie.
He really does. We have a 7-year time jump. We see that Helen is very depressed and has gained weight. We're going to forgive this movie for its fat phobia because it was 1992 and, you know,
I won't, the fat suit's a little much for me.
Yeah.
But I, like I said before, I barely remember this part of the movie. Like, I don't remember this from when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But yeah. Oh my god, yes. So she's in the fat suit. She's got a shit ton of cats.
She eats cake frosting from the can.
Which is so gross to me, and I don't think that's a real fat person thing. I don't think they actually do that. No. I don't do that.
No.
Like, I don't know any fat person that does that. That's a skinny person thing. That's what they do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. we don't do that. Like, I don't do that.
No, we have standards.
I don't know. That's what I'm saying. Like, if I'm going to eat something from a can, it's going to be, like, an entire thing of peanuts.
You know what I mean? At least get some protein.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I'm going to eat an entire package of beef jerky. Like, at least that's, I mean, it's too salty, but it's not that bad for me. I don't know. I just think that's weird. But I also am not a frosting person. So, like, I'm like,
me neither. Me neither. I think
my favorite part of the scene, though, is, yeah, it's not, like, I don't even particularly care for cake. Like, it's not my favorite dessert wise, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Same here.
There are so many other things in this world than cake. Same here. So, I don't know. But in this scene, she is, like, eating her cake frosting and watching a Madeline Ashton film or TV show on VHS because... Madeline is being strangled and she keeps rewinding it and rewatching it. All the while, her landlord is like banging on her door, trying to evict her. So clearly she's suffered like an entire mental break because Madeline has taken yet another man from her or taken everything from her, she assumes.
Yeah.
Like, she's gained a bunch of weight, like, shit ton of cats. So she's just sitting there trying to rewind it as she's being dragged out of her apartment by the police. Which is that a thing? Can you even do that?
That's what I was about to ask. Like, I can understand the cops coming to, like, evict a person, but they're like, you're under arrest. It's like, for what? You can't arrest her for being in her own apartment. Like, you can... make her leave the apartment, but it doesn't make any sense.
Well, it was also 1992, which is hilarious because I thought it was 1988. So I'm off by a couple of years.
Well, to be fair, when this happens, it's 1978 plus 7 years. So that's still in the 80s. And then there's another 7-year jump.
Oh.
So the movie starts like 14 years before the movie is set.
That's right. Yeah. Well, I mean, like, if it would be, I would say that it's like, if we're thinking about the switch guard, but like, if it was them arresting her to like, because the next scene is her in like a psych ward. So if like they were putting her, like, doing like a mental health well check slash like, I don't know what it's called anymore, like section whatevering, you know what I mean? Like putting her away for her own mental well-being. Okay. But that's not what we see. You know what I mean?
Right. Right. It should have been like guys in lab coats, like throwing her in a padded truck.
Yeah. Not
getting arrested. But yeah, like Julie says, the next scene, she's in a psych ward and she's in group therapy. And
I love this part. It's so funny.
She brings up Madeline again and she talks about her so much that it like drives the other patients berserk. And what's funny is
but she was prompted.
Yeah, to be fair.
She was prompted.
And what's funny is Deborah Jo Rupp from That 70s Show is in this scene. She doesn't have any lines or anything, but she's there. I'm like, that's Deborah Jo Rupp. Like, why is she in this movie and doesn't have any lines? I was like, hi Deborah Jo. Never noticed it until today's watching. Did you ever watch that comedy show?
No.
I watched it and I can't decide if I'm going to watch the new show or not. Probably not. I'm still.
As you know, when did that show air? In the 90s?
2000.
Yeah, I was busy. Let's do another stuff.
Oh, okay.
sorry, man. Like, sitcoms weren't my jam. But also, like, the therapist, like, starts screaming at her. Like, she takes her into this room and, like, starts screaming at her. And I'm like, mental health in the 80s, am I right? Like,
yeah.
Like, she's like, you're not 1 pound lighter. I'm like, is that, like, a tenet of her therapy? Does she need to lose weight? Like, come on.
Right.
Like, clearly she's suffered a mental break. And
suck.
So the. Hey, I did call mine back. I could call her. I'll try to find another one, but that one sucked. But the therapist suggests that Helen eliminates the thought of Madeline from her mind. And Helen takes that the absolute wrong way.
Yeah, she takes it literally. She's like, yeah, eliminate Madeline.
Yeah. Which is very funny.
Yes. So we have another 7-year jump. And we see Madeline and Ernest are unhappily married. Living in Beverly Hills.
Shocker.
Yeah. Madeline's career has declined and Ernest is an alcoholic. And they never exactly explain why, but I guess it's implied that his alcoholism affected his career. And so now, instead of being a surgeon, he is a reconstructive mortician.
He drinks so much that his hands shake when he's sober. So yeah. He can't do the other stuff because she destroyed his hands, basically. And I think a little bit of his spirit. So my favorite thing, like, going forward, like, every time you see Ernest in this movie, he just looks pale and, like, gross. Like, he's very pale. He's, like, old. I guess because at this point... At this point, I guess they're pushing 50. So... Mm-hmm. Which I googled it because I was like, how the hell old was Goldie Hawn when they filmed this movie? And she was like 45.
She was 46 and Marilyn.
Okay.
And Meryl was 43. Yeah.
Okay. Because, you know, I was like, how old was she? But yeah, they're not great between them. I love that she makes the maid wake her up and be like, oh, you're looking younger every day.
And wakes Ernest up, but he's passed out on his, like, his den or whatever.
Yeah.
On the floor. She wakes him up with a Bloody Mary, and he's like, more vodka.
He also says, this is an angel that I see before me, and she's like, oh, thank you, and he's like, not you. Here's my question. Do you think that if Madeline hadn't interfered, if Ernest and Helen would have been happy?
No.
You don't think so?
No.
Fair.
Because if you can fall out of love with someone so quickly just by meeting one other person, then you didn't love them to begin with.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. It'd be one thing if we saw, like, a whole seduction of... But, like, he was obsessed with her as soon as he saw her on stage.
Yeah.
Ernest is a wiener.
He really is. Like, I sympathize with him, and, like, I'm glad he gets out, but, like, he is a wiener.
Yeah.
But I do think that this experience profoundly changes him later.
Oh, yeah, certainly.
Yeah. It'd be, you would have to.
Yeah. When Madeline is woken up by her maid, she's also given an invitation to a party celebrating Helen's new book called Forever Young. And
she's having a breakdown about that.
Yeah. So, of course, wanting to look as good as possible for this party, Madeline goes to the spa that she frequents for rejuvenation treatments.
Adrenochrome treatments. Chagall's is the name of it, because the guy that plays Chagall is that guy.
I didn't recognize him at all.
I think he looks like somebody else. He reminds me of the guy from Practical Magic.
Hmm. Oh, Aiden Quinn?
He looks like Aiden Quinn, but he's not Aiden Quinn.
I see.
But yeah, so she goes to the Adrenochrome factory because she's looking to get another transfusion. And this girl is like, comes up to her with the fakest of fake French accents, which is so funny. I just, every time I see it. And then like, Madeline is having like, so the transfusion that they do is like a once every 6 months type of thing. And like, it's implied that it is like a weird blood transfusion thing. Cause like, you see like weird shit happening in the background, which is why I keep making Adrenochrome jokes. But she's like, I could pay you like on a personal basis. Like she's trying to like do everything she can to like get another one of these treatments so she can look her best for this party. And she like accuses the girl. We got to talk about this. Cause she sits there and she looks at that girl and she's like, you're standing there with your 22-year-old skin and your tits like rocks. Does that girl look 22? Cause she looks way older to me, but as you know, I can't tell how old people are just by looking at them anymore because I always think people look older.
Yeah. We've been having this discussion like via TikTok because both of us constantly see TikToks where there are people just like, yeah, I'm 23. And we're like, are you really?
Because they always look so old.
I think our whole, this is going to sound so conceited. However, I think you and I look very young for our age.
Yeah, I get that a lot.
Yeah. And I think it has skewed our entire perspective of people's ages.
Okay, I agree with that. Because I cannot gauge how old people are supposed to be at all.
Also, I understand what she means by tits like rocks, but I wouldn't want tits like rocks, thank you.
No.
My tits like pillows.
Fair. Anyways, that girl doesn't look 22. She looks like older than that, but I don't know if that is like because of her like early 90s makeup. Yeah. You know? Like it could just be that. So and you don't know.
So the spa owner sees how like upset Mad is about the whole situation and like how desperate she is to refreshen herself. So he gives her a card for Liesl von Rumen and she just dismisses it. She tears it in half and throws it in her purse. She's like, what a wacko. And
yeah.
And just completely blows it off.
He's such a that guy. He looks like somebody else, but I don't know who. I can't even remember what his name is now. I couldn't pronounce it if I tried. but he's not. He was like in a few episodes of other things, but not. I don't know why he just looks so familiar. But yeah, so the next scene is Madeline and Ernest in the car on the way to Helen's book party. And I love this scene because it's so funny because he's just sitting there breathing. And she's like, could you not breathe? Because he's breathing rather deeply and rather obnoxiously. But she's like, just don't breathe. Like, it's funny. She's like, could you not do that?
They arrive at the party. And they see someone from behind who's bigger and they assume that that's Helen. They're like, oh, she looked like she lost a few pounds. And then that person steps out of the way and we see new and improved Helen.
Okay, wait, I need to talk about another part right before that.
Okay.
So so we referenced before that like Ernest was like a very renowned plastic surgeon. And while he's sitting there, he gets a drink because he's an alcoholic. And this woman's like, oh my God, Dr. Ernest Menville. And she's like, oh, I can't thank you for how much, you know, you did for my Aunt Esther. She looks so good. It was a shame to bury her. And she's like, what's your secret? And he has probably presumably already been drinking. So he starts talking about how he uses spray paint, mannequin spray paint on the bodies that he like does up before their funerals. And this woman gets mad at the answer. And I was like, girl, you asked.
Right.
Like, why are you mad at him for asking? Like, he answered you. Like,
what did she expect the answer to be? Like, I used pixie dust? Like,
yeah, like MAC matte foundation primer? Like, girl, what? No. Like, what do you expect? Like, what is the answer you're expecting here? Like,
Yeah.
and if you didn't want to know, you shouldn't have asked. I that just that gets me because I remember that part, and I'm like, girl, what? But yeah, so they see this woman. And my favorite part is when she turns around, Madeline's like, we're leaving.
Right. Immediately. Not even a breath. Just like, we're leaving.
And this point when she turns around, holy shit. Kate Hudson looks so much like her mom. Like, yes. This is like, they look almost identical at this point. Like they always look very similar, but like, oh my God, at this point specifically, especially because I just watched Glass Onion. And Kate Hudson's in Glass Onion, and they look so much alike. Like, it's almost they're, like, at the same ages at this point. Mm-hmm. Look so much alike. I mean, obviously, it's genetics, but you know.
Yeah. It's funny, too, and worth noting for if anyone's listening to this that hasn't seen the movie, which, what are you even doing? But not only does she, like, look better than she did during the fat suit era, she looks better than she did when we first see her. Like, when we first see her, she's slim, but she has, like, a really bad haircut and, like, mousy brown collar, and she just dresses really plain. She's, like, a knockout. She looks young, and her hair is this gorgeous red, and she's in this beautiful red gown. It's just, oh, she looks amazing.
And she has her scary blue eyes.
Yeah, those crazy big Goldie Hawn eyes. Oh, I love Goldie Hawn.
Fair.
So she Helen talks to Madeline first, and
they do their little like mad hell. I'm like, oh God.
I do like that. I like the fact that their names abbreviated spell out mad earn than hell, like mad earn and hell.
Oh, huh. That's funny.
Yeah, it's clever. Yeah. But they like, they kiss each other's asses, but they get in little jabs there, too. I should have written down the shit that they said, but they, like, oh, she's, like, oh, I talked to your publicist, and she was, like, oh, yeah, Madeline will go to an opening of an envelope. And she's, like, I almost fired her. She's, like, I fired her. Well, I almost fired her.
Yeah. And this is, they do the, like, back when on the Broadway thing, like, back at the beginning of the movie, like Madeline kisses Helen's cheek and leaves red lipstick on her face, and Helen does the same thing here. Like, she kisses her cheek and leaves like a big old lipstick stain on her cheek.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
Oh yeah. And then also Helen starts playing Madeline and Ernest against each other, because mm-hmm. she's like, I never blamed you, he went to you, which fair, but then she goes with Ernest and is like, or she like gets him to come away, you know what I mean? And she's like, oh, blah blah blah, look what she's done to you, look what she's done to you, she ruined your career, she's taking your life, blah 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 blah. But yeah
and Madeline overhears all this shit that she says to Ernest, so she's pissed and even more insecure because of the whole situation. So after the party, unclear if it's the same night or whatever, but whatever, some evening, we see Madeline go to visit her younger lover,
her side piece,
and
Dakota.
And Dakota is not alone at his place. She's like, oh, you have someone here, don't you? And it's funny because she gets pissy about it, which is hilarious because she's married, so like,
yeah,
what is fidelity in this situation? But we see a glimpse of the woman that he's with, and she's young and hot and naked, and it really gets under Madeline's skin.
Mm-hmm.
And she storms off, and Dakota's kind of a dick about it. Like, she doesn't have any right to get pissy with him, but yeah. She also, like, goes to leave, and he just fucking, like, you know what I mean? He's just driving it in harder. He's
yeah.
Like, you know, people say we look ridiculous together. How do you think that makes me feel? Blah, 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 blah. It's like, shut up, Dakota. Just, like, let her leave.
Yeah, he's like, find someone to your own age. My favorite part is, as, like, a tenet of all, like, cheesy movies, like, the rain starts immediately.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite part of that scene, though, is when she snaps at him and she's like, life faster! He's like, I'm trying!
Oh, yeah, at least, like, quickly.
He's like, I'm trying! That's my favorite part. I think that's funny. But then my next favorite part, though, is the rain starts and she's, like, driving in her car and the the headlights have windshield wipers.
I also love that it's nighttime, it's raining, she's driving wearing sunglasses.
Yeah.
I'm like, Madeline, how can you see?
Oh, she's so funny. She sees her own face in the mirror and screams and like almost stops traffic.
Which makes her purse spill. And when her purse spills, she sees the torn up business card that she got from the spot.
Yes.
So she goes to the address on the card. And it's this like crazy, like Frankenstein looking mansion.
And I love it. I would love to live there.
Oh, yeah. It's a vibe. And like this burly 80s hair henchman like opens the door and lets her in. And then these two, what are they, like Doberman pinschers?
Maybe, yeah.
Like two Dobermen come in out of nowhere and they like sit next, they guard this box that's sitting in the middle of the room. And the guy, the henchman, like leads her into this sitting room and she sits down next to another henchman. And then a voice comes from a chair that's facing the fireplace, and it's Liesel, played by Isabella Rossellini.
Who is hot as hell in this movie. Oh, my God.
She's always hot. And she's wearing, Liesel is wearing nothing but a sarong and just necklaces covering, these big, elaborate, long necklaces covering her titties, and that's it. That's all she's wearing.
Yes. She
has chic little black bob. Mwah. If I was hot, I would totally do that as a Halloween costume. How fun would that be?
Oh, yeah.
You'd freeze to death, but it would be a blast.
you can, if we were hot, you could wear that, and I would wear the Princess Leia bikini.
It'd be awesome.
It would be so awesome.
I need a lot of double-sided tape to get the necklaces to, like,
If you were hot, you wouldn't care.
Well, that's true. I'm hot. I'm just not skinny.
Yeah.
You're hot. We're just, they don't make Leia's bikinis in our sizes.
Not that would make me feel good about myself. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, where were we? Oh, Liesel. So we see Liesel and she's beautiful, scantily dressed. And she asks Madeline, how old do you think I am? And she's like, 38, 28, 23. Because she can see
them. She doesn't look, 38 is fine.
Right. Yeah, she does. She looks 38, like, reasonably. She's an amazing, beautiful 38, but she looks 38.
Yeah. But again, as previously addressed, I don't know how old anyone is.
Yeah, we have our facial blindness. We're like, I don't know. But she claims to be 71 and she's like, that's what I can give to you. I can give you eternal youth and beauty.
You know, what's funny. She was about 40 in 92.
Yeah.
She was probably about 38 when they shot this or just over. So yeah.
Yeah. Isabella, you look 38. What I don't understand, I was trying to do the math, and like some of the references she makes and some of the people we see at her party later, the math ain't mathing.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Because if she's 71 in 92, then she was like born, in the 50s, right? No.
No. Wait.
She'd be born in the 20s.
Sure. Right? Yeah.
But when she was she would be an adult in the 50s. But she's making references to like Greta Garbo and shit like that. That is just like, okay, were you the keeper of this potion in your 20s? It doesn't make any sense.
Maybe she was.
Maybe she was. Give me the spinoff that shows me Liesel's backstory.
And how she
got the potion. So it's all about this potion. She reveals this potion in this really elaborate, it's like in a box within a box within a Fabergé egg that's like laced shut, and then within a vial that like bounces on a plate. It's just like very elaborate. It's like a Russian nesting doll of shit. Finally we see this magic pink potion, and of course Madeline's like, okay, you're full of shit. And she's like, well, let me show you. So she takes the blade that's like holding one of the boxes shut, and she uses it to stab Madeline's fingertip. And I love her line reading. She's like, ow, are you nuts?
Oh, yeah.
Love Meryl Streep so much. But she dabs a bit of the potion and puts it in the wound on her finger, and it makes her hand young and gets rid of like her age spots and wrinkles, and it makes her hand look all beautiful and youthful. So now she believes that the potion works. I have a question.
Yeah.
How do we think this potion works in terms of, like, because you take the potion, and not only does it give you eternal youth and life, but it makes you more beautiful than you were when you took it. But at like,
Yes.
but how is it gauging that? You know what I mean? Like, if you're 50 and you look 50, which I think they try to make her look a little older than 50.
Yeah.
My age thing is also skewed because I think I look really young for my age, but I think my mom does too. Like, my mom's in her late 50s, but I don't think she looks it at all.
Yeah. I think my mom looks younger too.
Yeah. We're just a bunch of what is
We're
it?
blessed.
We're all blessed. Spring
Well, that's
pigeons?
fair because,
Spring chickens?
well, that's fair too because, like, my grandparents are in their 90s, and a lot of people are like, oh, I can't believe they're in their 90s. So maybe I just have good genes. Maybe you have good genes.
Yeah.
So.
Why? But say you're like 50 and you take this potion and it makes you look what? Does it just like select some random number of years and pluck them off of you for eternity? You know what I mean? I've always
Yeah.
wondered that. Anyway.
Well, and it obviously doesn't work like that because later you see Andy Warhol.
Ow. He looks like shit. He looks like what he looked
Yeah.
like when he quote unquote died.
Exactly. So I don't know the answer. I think here's the thing. They did not think this hard about the potion that we are thinking about it right now.
That is absolutely true. So she takes the potion, she drinks it. And as soon as she drinks it, Liesl goes, now a warning. And she's like, now a warning?
Yeah.
After I've drank it. And she's like, you will have youth and eternal youth and beauty, but you can be successful for like 10 years and then you have to disappear. Do you think it's worth it? In your opinion?
No. I don't
Yeah.
think so.
I don't think so either. Like,
Well,
10 years is not that long of time. And if it's like you can be awesome for 10 years and then you kind of have to disappear from, and understand why you have to because people get suspicious, but like, that sucks. Only 10
yeah.
years. And then it's like, well, then now what am I supposed to do?
Yeah.
Don't know.
Yeah, what
And
do you do after that?
exactly. Like, live in your mansion forever, hide in the Bermuda Triangle.
I guess that's what I would do.
It
I really wanted to make a joke about like going to live in the Nazi villages in Argentina, but it's not appropriate.
Too late. I already went there.
I know. I realized that after I said it, but I would not do that either. That doesn't sound like fun.
Oh no, unless you just like went around punching really old Nazis all day, that'd be fun.
Yeah. That's what you should do. That's what I would do with eternal life.
Go
Is
around punching
go.
Nazis.
Yeah.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
How many times do you think you could punch Kanye West?
Oh, I only have two hands.
Or, like, I don't know, like any of the other terrible people, that one dude, all of them.
I would punch till there's nothing left to punch.
Have you seen the TikToks of people being like Jewish people, like around their menorahs saying, like, fuck Kanye? Because it's really funny.
Have you seen Kanye's like 2024 merchandise that looks like
Yes,
swastikas? Holy
bruh.
shit, bro.
That's just
Yikes.
too much. Because I feel like I don't want to like dogpile on him because there are other Nazis to dogpile on. But like, brother, what is he doing?
Right. Ugh. Any crap. Madeline takes the potion and it doesn't go in effect immediately. So she like gets up to leave and she's passing a mirror and she's like, oh, I look the same. But then as she watches her reflection, her face lifts, her hair rejuvenates.
Her butt lifts.
Her butt lifts, which I don't know how they did the butt thing, but I read about how they did the boobs. It said a pneumatic bra was built to create the effect where Streep's breasts become higher and firmer after drinking the potion, but the effect didn't look realistic enough. In order to get the shot, Streep's dresser stood behind her out of sight of the camera.
I knew it.
And pushed her breasts into position.
You can almost tell that there's someone there, but that's fine. I don't care because I've suspended my disbelief enough for this because I love it.
Right. And I love it when it's all done, she like turns and looks at the henchman. She's like, I'm a girl.
The henchmen are all named and their names are Tom, Dick, and Harry.
Right. I like to imagine that whatever their names were when they started working for Liesl, she's like, you shall be Tom, you shall be Dick, you shall be Harry.
Yes.
They're just like, yes, mistress.
Because all they have to do is like wear crushed velvet shorts and be hot.
Yeah, pretty much. Hand her robe every once in a while.
Yeah.
God, wouldn't that be great just to be like a mistress of a mansion and just have like hot people that work for you?
Yes.
There to be hot. That'd be great.
I feel like I would get depressed though, like real quick, even though I would be like, you know what I mean? Just because I wouldn't be doing anything and I would feel bad.
I'm sure you would. I'm thinking for me, I'd just be like, this is great. I'd be doing something. Some philanthropy of some sort.
Yeah.
Anyway. Meanwhile, while all this is going on, Helen is at Ernest and Madeline's house, seducing Ernest.
Yes. She comes on very strong, very, very strong. And you're like, and like, again, like you said, you're like, but why though? Because he looks so gray and scared and pale. Yeah. And he's Bruce Willis. So he looks like Bruce Willis. but like, we also, before this, we see there's like a scene where Helen is like practicing. Like, she's, like, spraying water in her eyes, and she's like, Madeline, I need to speak to Madeline. And then, like, we see her do that to Ernest, but then she's really there to talk to him and propose that they murder Madeline together.
Mm-hmm. It's great. He's like, Madeline's not here. And she's like, great. She's like, throws her umbrella and comes inside.
Yeah.
And then there's that whole really extremely cringy exchange when she's just like, I used to shy away from saying such things, but now I can. She's like, sexual. Sensual, sexy, sex. And I'm just like, oh my God, stop talking.
Yeah.
It's like, you're Goldie Hawn, you're really hot. You don't have to say anything. Like, you have his attention.
Mm-hmm.
But they're like fooling around on the couch. And then she directs the conversation into a plot to kill Madeline because to divorce her she would like take all of his money and it would be a whole messy thing. But she has a point, but still, she convinces him to murder Madeline way too easily. He's just on board way too quick.
Yeah. He's dumb and thinks with his wiener.
Yeah. Yeah, that basically sums it up. So the plan is, we see this whole dream sequence of Helen's plan, which is to line all of the wine glasses with a alcohol-based sedative or something that will knock her out. Then have, like, invite Helen over for dinner. And then at the dinner, Madeline will drink from any of the glasses will knock her out. And they're going to load her up into a car, cover her in empty bottles and alcohol, and push her off the cliff and make it look like she crashed drunk driving. And that's their big plan.
My favorite part of the plan, though, is that they finish dinner first. You can't murder on an empty stomach.
I also think it's funny, too, that, like, in the reality of the film, their iconic colors is Madeline is white and Helen is red. But in Helen's fantasy, Madeline's wearing red and she's wearing white.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. I think I just heard my mom pull up. Oh well, I'll keep going until she yells at me.
Okay.
So, hey, Gare Bear, is mom home? Okay. What car is running? Oh, okay. So Madeline gets home and she and Ernest argue and she berates him, and because she's all hot now, so she gets all dressed up to leave, and he's like, he berates her for leaving, and she makes fun of him and calls him flaccid and just gets under his skin. And so he starts to strangle her at the top of their stairwell, and she begs him to stop, and he does. But she's like teetering on the edge of the step, about to fall. And she's like, help me, help me. And what does she say to him? She's like, help me, you wimp, or something. She just gets in one more jab, and he's like, oh,
Yeah.
that's it. And he just pushes her down the stairs.
Oh, did he push her?
Oh, yeah. At the very last second, after she says something shitty, he just goes boop and just pushes her chest.
Deserve.
Yeah. So she goes down the stairs and breaks her neck and is just like laying unmoving at the bottom of the stairs.
Yes.
So Ernest assumes she's dead because her neck went creak. And so he goes and calls Helen. And Helen's like, you're an idiot. Like, you can't, it'll show all the records now that you called me before you called an ambulance. Like, get off the phone with me, blah, blah.
Well,
And
they come up with a plan to say why that they were already on the phone when she fell.
yeah.
But while they're having this conversation, we, as the viewer, can watch Madeline get up. And it's like body horror almost,
Yeah.
because she's backwards.
Her head is done a complete 180 and is facing the opposite direction. And she's like walking face forward, but that means ass forward. So she's like stumbling backwards. And they just
Yeah.
like put a blue screen hood over over Meryl and had her walk backwards for all this stuff. And this is one of the instances where originally they had like a puppet head. Anytime you see a shot of like over the shoulder and with like Bruce's coverage, you can tell it's the animatronic head. But then once it's actually talking, it didn't look realistic enough, so they did the CG. And she like spins her head around and fixes herself. But her like you can see the bone in her neck is all fucked up. So she's like, I think I need a doctor. So he frantically drives her to the hospital, and she sees a doctor, Sydney Pollack, the famous actor Sydney Pollack, in an uncredited role. And he's having a hard time of it, fellas. He's like checking her temperature and checking her wrist and doing all this stuff, and he's like, "This ain't right." My favorite gag during the scene is he like has a stethoscope and he's looking for her pulse and he's trying to hear her heartbeat. And he doesn't hear anything, so he walks over, throws his stethoscope in the trash, gets a new one, tries the new one. Still doesn't work, still no heartbeat. And he's like, well, you're technically dead. So I'm gonna go get a second opinion. So he leaves, and quickly has a heart attack. We see him like we see him a moment later getting like the paddles on his chest because it's completely freaked him out, and it's freaked Madeline out too, and so Madeline faints. Ernest is running around the hospital trying to find another doctor, screaming, I need another doctor, blah blah blah, help, help, help. You see a very weird, spooky shot of three floating nuns go by. I don't know
Yeah, I
if that's
didn't get that at all.
I think there was a deleted scene where we see them like bring a priest to the doctor, but it's completely non-essential.
Oh, yeah.
So they just left it in to be spooky, I guess. But by the time Ernest goes back to Madeline's room, they had found her in there unconscious and, of course, with no pulse. So they thought she was dead. So they sent her to the morgue. And Ernest is like,
She'll be furious.
so he runs down to the morgue to find her and like unzips her from her bag, and she's awake now. And so he like takes her home from the hospital before anyone else can figure out what's going on.
Yes. And she must be like going gray at this point. Like, because he immediately gets the formaldehyde and like the stuff from his like practice.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see him like basically doing her makeup.
Right. He considers her reanimation a miracle.
Yes.
Like, a miracle. And because, of course, he was the one that pushed her down the stairs. So to him, this is like salvation. Like, oh, my God, you know, she is still alive. Because blah, blah, blah. So like Julie says, I think he does embalm her, because I think in the background you see like a vat of blood. I think he did like pump her of her all for juices. And he's spray painting her legs and all this stuff. And then Helen shows up. So Urge goes downstairs to let Helen in. And she's like dressed in a veil and like this weird little outfit. And she's brought a bunch of shit to, because she saw them driving into the house and saw what looked like Madeline's dead body in the front seat. So Helen, of course, still thinks that Madeline's dead.
Yes.
So Helen comes in with all the, with like a tarp and shovels and stuff to bury her in Death Valley. And Madeline is upstairs and overhears them talking. So now she knows that they had plotted to kill her.
Yes. And
there's that great shot. We see her hand holding the marble pillar.
Yes.
And Helen makes the remark that Madeline was a terrible actress, and she just claws the marble. It's so cool. So Madeline goes downstairs, having heard this discussion of plotting to kill her, and she grabs a shotgun and fucking blows Helen away. And that must have been a powerful shotgun too, because Helen goes a flying. She flies out through the French doors into the courtyard and lands in their fountain.
And like, I love their exchange there. He's like, "What about the neighbor?" She's like, "In however many years have we ever seen a neighbor?" Like,
right.
Like, we don't, like, our neighbors don't give a fuck. Like, they do not care.
Right, it's Los Angeles. No one gives a fuck.
Yeah. And my favorite part is when she's like, and she bought all the equipment.
And he starts, freaking out. So he's like grabbing the tarp. And he's like, "Will you help me?" And she's like, "Yes, yes, I'd love to help. I'd love to help." She's like all giddy. She's like, "Yes, let's get rid of Helen's body." Because at this point, she's the undead. She has no consequences whatsoever.
Yeah.
Because Ernest's first impulse was to call the cops. And she's like, "What are you going to do, Ernest?" She's like, "What if they find me on the floor, not moving, no pulse?" She's like, "Do you know what they do to fat, balding Republicans in prison, Ernest?" And he's like, "Okay, we can bury her." But before they can move her body, while they're like fussing with the tarp, Helen stands up out of the fountain. And she has a huge hole in her stomach, which is not how shotguns work. But
and really great CGI for the 90s.
Really great CGI. Good effect. Good puppetry. And like all the water comes pouring out of the hole in her middle. And other than this giant hole, she's unharmed. Her eyes, like, she lost a lot of blood. So, like, she's really pale and her eyes are, like, a really creepy blue now. Instead of, like, bright blue, they're, like, white.
It's unsettling.
It is very unsettling. But something I didn't mention was when Liesl gave Madeline the potion, she gave her a little tiny brooch. And now Madeline notices the brooch on Helen as well. And she's like, "You took the potion too, bitch." She's like, "When did you take it?" She's like, "I took it in 1985. And she's like, "Wow, blah, blah, blah." And they're like fussing over it. And of course, Ernest is completely wigged out, has no idea what's going on.
Yeah.
And so Helen and Madeline, in the most iconic scene of the whole movie, get into a fight. They both have these shovels. And they're like sword fighting with the shovels. And I read that Meryl Streep accidentally scarred Goldie Hawn's cheek with a shovel during the scene.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Fucking hit her in the face on accident. But it's a great scene. There's like, we see it play out in shadow a little bit. You can see the light from the fireplace coming through the hole in Helen's stomach. And then at one point, they're like bad mouthing each other while they're fighting. And Helen hits Madeline over the head with a shovel and it like smashes her head into her neck into her torso. And she has to like fix it and she looks all wobbly. So they're both like horrifying at this point.
I won't speak to you until you put your head on straight.
So my favorite part, my favorite scene is Madeline's shovel breaks and she has kind of just like a little spear. And she throws it at Helen and it goes right through the hole in Helen's stomach and stabs the couch. And at first she's like, yes, wait, no, shit, damn. She was like happy she made the shot, but she's like, oh, I was aiming for her. Damn. So funny. Meryl is so good in this movie. She's so funny. But the fight tames down and they start talking. And the reason that Madeline has been so adversarial towards Helen and like has taken all these guys from her is because when they were friends growing up, like Madeline was of like a lower class than Helen. And Helen and her friends kind of like left her out sometimes. And she's like, admit it. You thought I was cheap. And she's like, well, admit it. You've stole my boyfriends to hurt me on purpose. And they like agree that like, yes, they both intentionally hurt each other and they're both sorry. So now they've reconciled.
There's also a point during the scene where Helen sits down on the couch with the thing that's like stuck in the couch through her hole.
It's so great. It's a really good effect. She's fed up with the two fighting. Ernest has started to pack up to leave. While they're fighting, he's like packing a bag. But Helen and Madeline, again, looking very creepy because they're like undead and all fucked up, convince him to stay to repair their bodies at least one last time, right? So he fixes them all up and they look great and he's getting ready to leave. And I can't remember if it's Madeline or Helen, but one of the paint like chips on their chest and they're like, oh fuck, like we can't let him leave. He has to stay so that he can like repair us when we need it, repairs. What if it chips? What if it rains? What do we do? And so they realize that Ernest has to drink the potion so that he can live forever and help them. So they try to drug him to get him to go to Liesl's. And they give him a drink. And he's like rambling on and they're just trying to get him to drink this scotch or whatever they've given him. And he's like twirling it around and gesturing while he talks. And it's all just slowly spilling out of the cup. And there's just like a little bit left. And the girls aren't even listening to whatever it is he's saying. I'm not even listening to whatever he's saying. I'm just watching all this alcohol spill out of the cup, right? And there's like a little bit left. And he like goes to drink it. And he's just like, you know what? I'm going to stop drinking. And he like puts it on the glass. And so they just like pick up a vase and knock him unconscious. And then I'm very impressed because the next it cuts to him waking up in a tux at Liesl's mansion.
In the pool room.
In the pools. Yeah. The pool room. So, like, I wonder how did they, first of all, the fact that vase to the head kept him unconscious that long, very impressive. Secondly, how these two, like, skinny, undead corpse ladies were able to, like, haul his limp body all the way to Liesl's house, also very impressive. And I assume from there, like, we can have the henchman change his clothes or whatever. Because Liesl's having a big to-do. She's having a big party. And we see Liesl swimming in her pool, and she gets out. She's all naked. She's wearing... No, correction. She's not naked. She's wearing heels in her pool. Yeah. And, like, some weird... long beady thing around her neck.
Yes.
And Isabella Rossellini used a body double for that shot because we see her bare ass. I've never understood this because Isabella Rossellini was naked in Blue Velvet. Just like, okay, so you don't mind being naked in this movie, but you don't want to be naked in this movie. I don't know. If you were an actress, would you care? Or would you be like either naked or not naked?
know.
I always wonder that. I wonder if it's like a pay thing, too. If it's like, oh yeah, I'll show my ass in this movie, but you have to pay me X amount of money.
Yeah.
I bet that's it. I don't know. Anyway. Liesel offers Ernest the potion free of charge in exchange for his expertise of, you know, maintaining bodies the way he can. And he almost drinks it. He almost does it. But then she's like egging him on to drink it. And she makes a comment. She's like, live forever.
Siempre viva.
Exactly. And he's like, it occurs to him how awful immortality would be. Like, eventually you want to rest. You want to be laid to rest. You don't want to live forever. That'd be exhausting and lonely and miserable. And that he realizes this. So instead of taking the potion, he pockets it and takes off.
Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, he's not. Oh, also in the scene when she gives him the potion, you can see that she has a Coke nail.
She does have a Coke nail.
She has a Coke nail. I was like, wait a second. And then I was like, oh, it's a Coke nail.
Oh,
my favorite part, too, I noticed now that in my notes, where he's like, when they're right before they hit him with the vases, like, he's like, I did what I was supposed to do till death to us part. Well, you girls are dead and I'm parting.
See, I'm glad you listened to that whole thing because I was too busy watching the physical comedy.
He's like, you girls are dead and I'm parting. And then they just like beat him up. Yeah, he's like, he basically says that he'll get bored and then he doesn't want to watch everyone around him die, which is wild because, like, did not everyone around him tell him to, like, divorce his wife? Like, what the fuck?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, who's there? It's not like, well, I guess at the beginning, is it the woman crying at the wedding? That must have been his mother.
Yeah, presumably.
But, anyways, he runs from Tom, Dick, and Harry, and then, like, she's like, he won't get far, and then they go up to the, like, party room, and this is where we see a bunch of the people, like, that are clients of hers. Mm-hmm. Andy Warhol, Marilyn Monroe.
Mm-hmm. Elvis Presley, Jim Morrison, James Dean, Greta Garbo. And Madeline and Helen are at the party, too, and they see him, like, trying to hide among the crowd. And they see that he has the potion. They're like, oh, shit, we gotta go after him. So they start chasing him, too.
Yes. But he escapes. He must go up. He goes up in an elevator, I think. And he's being chased by those goddamn dogs. And he gets chased onto the roof. And then once he gets onto the roof, he starts to climb up. Because he's, like, I think he's trying to shimmy down a drain pipe. And then, of course, that all goes wrong. He's caught by suspenders. And Madeline and Helen are like, the only way for you to survive this is if you drink the potion. And, like, Helen can't help herself. So she, like, gets in a jab at him. And so he just drops it.
Right.
Right? I don't remember exactly what she says. But she just gives him, you know. Oh, she's she's like, you have to drink it. You have to live for us. And he was just like, I'll pass.
Right. It's the implication of just like, if I live forever, I'm going to be stuck with them. So fuck that.
Yeah. And he drops it. And then he immediately drops, like, his suspenders bust and he falls through the glass roof into the pool. And he is able, like, there are people there. They're like, are you done?
Like, yeah, it's Jim Morrison and some chick, like, wanting to take a spin in the pool. Which, at this point, the pool would now be filled with glass, right?
Does it matter if you're dead?
That's true. Undead? That's true. So, he gets out of the pool and presumably makes it out.
Yeah, he goes outside and he steals James Dean's car.
Yes. And then it cuts to 37 years later.
Wait, Liesel commands Madeline and Helen to bring him back. So they have to leave. And, like, we see them go to the house, and they're like, oh, I told you we should have, he wasn't going to come back here. We should have went straight to the airport or whatever. Then it cuts to 37 years later.
Right. There, you see them like sit and kind of realize, oh, we're stuck with each other.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have to paint your ass, and you're going to have to paint mine. Paint mine.
I'd paint your ass, by the way.
Oh, I'd paint yours too, Jules.
Oh, thank you.
So it's 37 years later, and Matt and Hal are attending Ernest's funeral, where he's eulogized by a priest who's talking about how he had this really adventurous and fulfilling life, and he had this big family and lots of friends.
Like 6 kids.
Yeah.
After 50, which is too many.
Yeah, that's impressive. It is too many. His poor wife.
It's a vagina, not a clown car.
And Matt and Hal are in the back of the church, and they're all covered with veils and stuff, but like they're grotesque at this point. They're all cracked and their paint's peeling, and they have putty covering most of their flesh, and it's just it's bad. And they mock the eulogy and leave early.
Because they're missing their spray paint.
Right. They're like, did you leave it in the car? And they're like fussing, and they go out to the front steps of this church, and Helen slips on a dropped can of spray paint and falls down a flight of steps, and she drags Madeline with her.
Mm-hmm.
And their bodies like shatter to pieces at the curb. And they're just like laying in pieces in broad daylight on the sidewalk. And Helen's asked Madeline if she remembers where they parked their car.
Yeah, she's like, that's part of the argument that they have too. Because she's like, when has it ever worked if you ask me where, like, if I remember where you put something?
Right.
Or where I put something. When has that ever worked? And they're like arguing. And then when Helen is slipping on the stairs, she's like, help me. My legs won't work. And then Madeline says something. So Helen grabs her. And that's when they both fall down the stairs and just break into a million pieces.
Right. And the end is like, I mean, the whole movie is kind of sticky and dumb, but the very end is very over the top. And you can definitely see in that moment, like, the Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah.
Like, influence. It's a very, like, last waka type joke at the end. And that's Death Becomes Her. That's the movie.
Well, and, like, here's the other thing. So, like, this potion specifically sucks because if something does happen to you, you're alive.
Right.
Like, you don't feel pain, but you're alive.
Mm-hmm.
So, like,
would you be, like, a sentient pile of ashes if you set on fire? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Also, here's my question. Do they need to eat and drink?
Yeah. Good question.
Because can they? And additionally, so say you take this potion, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it takes us back to when we were our hottest. Okay?
Okay.
We're going to live forever.
Mm-hmm.
Are we having our periods forever? Do you know what I mean? Like, are we having our periods forever? Can we bear children in this state?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of questions.
If you can, do your kids inherently come with
immortality,
or is that not a thing? There are a lot of plot holes here that I would love to have answered.
Welcome to the show where we overthink everything.
Yeah, that, honestly, we could just make a whole podcast of that shit. That could be fun.
That should be the name of the show. Just like overthinking. The only other thing that I wanted to mention about the movie was the fact that the original film underwent like major re-editing after they had like negative feedback at a test screening. There, Tracy Ullman was originally in the movie. She played this whole other character that Ernest was in love with.
Oh.
And like they ran away together and like faked to death, and like she was there was a whole other plot.
Oh.
That it got cut out. Tracy Ullman can still be seen in the original trailer if you watch it. But like they had a bad test screening, and Robert Zemeckis wanted to like streamline the movie, which is a good call, because for like a comedy like this, you don't want to go that far over 90 minutes. And this one is already like an hour and 45.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine how long it would have been with this whole second.
Yeah, movies are too goddamn long these days. Oh my God.
I don't know if my attention span has shrank or movies have gotten longer or both.
No, they've gotten longer. So, like, especially right now, there are at least 2 3-hour films out.
Ugh.
So Avatar The Way of Water is 3 hours and 12 minutes or 3 hours and 14 minutes. And Babylon is like 3 hours. Babylon is also about 3 hours and 11 minutes. So like movies are way too long. Ridiculous. Yeah, it's just too much. Like, I mean, and this is especially coming from me, someone who has literally rewatched The Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King Extended Edition, which is a 4.5-hour movie. Like 6 times in the last 2 months. It's movies too long. Yeah. Except for those movies. Those movies are perfect. No edits.
Oh God. That's funny.
But yeah, like Babylon is like 3 hours and 11 minutes long. Like we can't even put a 9 p.m. show on it. It's too long. I love Death Becomes Her. It's a great film.
So do I.
I would love to see like a drag number that starts out with someone in the outfit that Madeline wears when she does her transformation, and like they turn around and they're like, "I'm a girl." I would love that. I think that would be a great start to a performance. Don't ask me what song they should do, but that would be a great start to the performance.
Oh, that reminds me. I wanted to songs. My favorite composer, Joe Iconis, writes a lot of like standalone, like musical theater type songs.
Yeah, we talked about this.
Yeah, and he has a song called Helen Sharp from the point of view of Helen.
Oh, and nice.
Yeah, it's insane. It's not one of my favorite songs of his, but it's, and I didn't even notice until, like, I didn't put it together because it's on his new album, and I'd heard like the first few seconds. It's like a 6 minute long song. And I'd heard like the first little bit of it and it wasn't my jam. So I like skipped it. And it wasn't until I started researching for this movie that I was like, Helen Sharp. That's the name of that song. That song's about Helen Sharp. And I listened to the whole thing. And then once you get into the meat of the song, she like is screaming Madeline's name and stuff. I'm like, I get it now.
Oh yeah. Okay.
So check that out, everybody. Go on YouTube and look up Helen Sharp by Joe Iconis. Any final thoughts on the film?
Everyone should watch it.
True. It is free right now. If you have Amazon Prime, you also have a thing called Freevee, which used to be known as IMDb TV, but now it's called Freevee, and it's free movies that just have ads in them, and it is currently on Freevee, so you can watch it for free, everybody.
Also, if you don't know, listen, I got to talk to your followers and your listeners. Mm-hmm. The Roku channel has seasons 1 through 7 of The Great British Bake Off on there. And also it has the entire Farscape series, just so you know.
Thank you for that public service announcement.
You're welcome. They also have the celebrity GBBOs.
Ooh, which nice.
Yeah, I watched the Grimmy one last night and I forgot how much I loved him.
I really want to. There's one with James McAvoy that I've always wanted
to see. Yes! Yes, it's on there. I want to see it. It's on the Roku channel.
Nice. Good to know.
And it comes with ads, but it's just like watching TV.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to watch the full James Acaster one, too, where that meme comes from.
I love him. Yes.
Started, had a breakdown, bon appetit.
Yes. So good. Ooh, you know what I'm gonna do today? I'm gonna go pop open my Snoop 19 Crimes and I'm gonna watch the Big Fat Quiz of the Year.
Ooh, good call. Mm-hmm. You're also going to hang out and talk to me and Heather, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
I will be popping my Snoop 19 Crimes while doing that.
All right, I gotta wrap this up. So
okay.
Thank you for all for listening. I hope you all have a happy new year. Thank you for joining us in 2023. If you want to help the podcast, you can click the link in the description. It'll take you to our support page where you can support us with a one-time donation or sign up for a monthly patronage. You can also support the podcast by sharing the link to your with your friends and followers and help us grow our audience. We greatly appreciate it. Thank you again to Julie for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
And until next time, we are the Weirdos, Mister.